How old is your little one?
She's 2.5 years old now.
It's a great age. I remember mine, man. It's when they mine's 18 now, almost.
Oh, wow.
It's but still my little girl. She still sits on my knee, and now she asks for my car keys and money.
It's not for a pacifier or a milk anymore.
Yeah. And the little brother goes, oh, how come she gets that? Because she's my girl. And
how old is the little brother?
He's 14, and he's a good dude. He's taller than me. He's I think he's heavier than me. He's like 99 kilos. He's 14 years old. He's a bit like a brick house. Wow. trying to. He does taekwondo, and boy, he's got a kick on him. He kicks like a horse.
Yeah, I love taekwondo.
Hey, that's cool. I'll just introduce you, and then we can just carry on. This is cool. Hey, everybody. This is August Unstruck. Thank you to all of you who've joined in the last few weeks, and particularly those from we have a lot of people on Facebook who's joined us from India particularly, and also the Africa, which is really cool to hear and see. And today I'm going to be talking to Stuart Williamson, who's based there in South Africa, and a place I've never worked. I've been invited several times, and just the schedule has not kind of been kind, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to go there one day. And as we've done in the past, we've Stunstruck is about talking to ordinary people who are doing extraordinary things. And I think one thing that's becoming clear and clear for some of you who've followed is that to make it in this business requires a level of extraordinariness about you. And the reason I'm speaking to Stuart, and look, some people ask me, what kind of people do you talk to? And I say, whoever I want and whenever I want. You know, there is a formula to this, but the best part of this formula is that we talk to people who are, I think, who are relevant at these times, and also people who have a story to tell that will inspire others. And that comes from the recommendation of other people that I know and trust. And Stuart is a guy that a few of us who are established stunt coordinators have got our eye on as well. And Stuart can elaborate on it a little bit, but I guess, you know, for some of us, starting in the business can be tricky, but I think if you just look it on paper, I think Stuart's start to the business is quite impressive. And Mad Max, and that's what I'm going to talk to him about that, and also that journey since then. And sometimes the start can be the most amazing part of anybody's story, and it's the journey after that that's colorful, or vice versa, or have a really colorful start, and then you make it onto those projects. And yeah, enough of me chatting. But hey, Stuart, good to have you on board, man.
Thank you, Augie. Thank you for having me on, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, where do you live? Just tell us about where you live right now.
I live in South Africa, Cape Town, and based this side here in Parklands area, and I'm right by the beach.
That's cool. And I get the feeling you're a bit like me. You always want to be close to the water, eh?
Yeah, I love being by the water. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. I did live in Johannesburg, but then once I actually moved to Cape Town, I never went back.
So cool. And hey, I was just if somebody goes on IMDb, I mean, your credits go back to 2014, I think, your first screen credit. I mean, and that's exciting for me, and get to talk to you, because you're actually somebody who's really relevant. And in terms of people who wanted to get into the business, you've traveled, you've done some amazing shows, Black Sails and Warrior, Mad Max, of course. I mean, these are shows that to die for, in terms of just be able to say that those are the shows you worked on. They're really amazing. And also you know, when you sent me your reel, I, you know, and I really love the fact that you've got some, and you're just, a lot of people will earn, takes a while to earn some decent stunts or gags in this industry. And you've done some pretty impressive gags that a lot of people carry into their career for the rest of their life. You know, one thing I've always noted that, to grow in this business, you need good identifiable stunts to promote yourself. When I look at your showreel, you've done some amazing, very identifiable stunts. And we can cover that a little bit later. Can you just tell us a little bit how, what life was like for you on your lead up to your very first job, your upbringing, you know, what crazy things your parents tried to stop you from doing and all those things?
How it all started when I was around 14, 15, one of my friends, Dylan, he actually introduced me to a thing called parkour, which I'm sure a lot of people know about, getting from A to B as quickly and sufficiently as possible. And then through my parkour journey with Dylan Davidson, who's the owner of Concrete Foundation Academy, I also started just incorporating a bit of gymnastic moves, basic gymnastics. And then I just got hooked. I just got hooked to moving and learning new abilities, new tricks, and based myself around understanding aerial awareness tactics and just really creating a, like a versatile state for myself. And yeah, I think after that, about 21, 22 is when I got a call from a friend, Brandon Levanis, who's actually a Cirque du Soleil performer now. He's doesn't work in stunts anymore. He works in Cirque du Soleil. And he called me up and he's like, "Hey, Stu, come to Cape Town. There's a casting." And I had no idea what the casting was for. I didn't even know what a casting was. But then I ended up following him to Cape Town and I did this physical casting. And then after the physical casting, I made it through and it was for Mad Max Fury Road. And then I made it into the team. So what happened was that team came to Cape Town and then we did a 2-week boot camp. And in that boot camp, that's when they had the official selection for who kind of passes through to become part of the Fury Road stunt team. And I actually lost hope for a second because it took about 2 months to get a message back. So I just carried on. I went back to Joburg. Didn't really think anything of it. And then I got a message saying, "Congratulations, you're selected for the Fury Road stunt team." And ever since that message, yeah, I went off to Namibia. I actually started working over there. And originally I was supposed to be there for like 3-4 weeks. And then I ended up staying there for 7 months, which was a massive, funny enough, it's actually probably one of the biggest jobs scale-wise with the units and everything that were operating. Still one of the biggest jobs I've ever done, even though it was my first job. And I think my biggest changing point for me on that job was when I was actually in an assembly and Guy Norris, he was standing there and he's like, who can we get to test some of these gags for Tom Hardy? And the first gag was being strapped to the front of the vehicle, crucified. Well, Eugene Anderson, which was the precision driver at the time, has to do a 180 with me strapped to the front of the car. And that was actually my very first stunt, being strapped to the front of a vehicle and doing a 180. And then, yeah, after that, I did a few more rehearsals for them. And then they flew Jacob Tamuri over, which is obviously the picture double. He works with Tom Hardy the most. And then he ended up doubling for Tom Hardy for quite a while after that. And then I think 3 or 4 months in, they realized they needed another double for doing wide shots, because obviously the scale of it got so big. So they asked me, would I like to be the Mad Max double? Well, okay, I don't really have many pads in my bag. It's my first job. I didn't know what to expect. And then, yeah, I ended up becoming the double for a little while. And that was kind of a really good kickstart to my career as a stunt performer, I guess. And the stunts that I did on that were quite scary.
That's quite a fierce job, really. I remember that they were... So how long was the period... What was the time difference between when you did that original audition to when you were asked to go to that second audition in Namibia? Or
I think it was around like 2 months, because I was already in Namibia doing the basic rehearsals, and then we did all the physical training and stuff, and then it was probably around like a 2-3 month gap. And then I actually ended up coming back to Joburg just to see my parents, and then I got a message from Guy Norris, "Hey mate, we need you to come back." I ended up going back. And God, I got thrown into the deep edge.
That's insane. I remember they were, they came to New Zealand, and I think it was about a year and a half before they started on the ground there, auditioning people looking for skinny, well, malnourished looking stunt guys, which is...
Yeah, we were told we were not allowed to eat, and we had a specific side of what the stunt guys eat and what the crew eats. A lot of us got very skinny.
Sneaking food into the stunt stunt bag.
Oh. No, we did do that.
You can tell who's that guy on the rig has put on some weight overnight. Sneaking in some chocolate. I can see that.
Oh, of course. Oh, okay. Wow.
And so... Yeah, I know a few people who worked on that show, and yes, very memorable trip for so many. I can't even remember what we were shooting at the time, but there was lots of exchange and messages happening during that time. Well, that's amazing. And also, like, you had Jacob Tamuri there, and then, of course, Adrian McGaw.
Adrian McGaw, yeah, he was the other double. Those were the guys I actually learned from, because I was a very new guy on the block. So for me to learn from them was actually such a great experience, actually. I was actually extremely intimidated by them, because obviously they knew so much more than me, but I just made myself an empty cup, and I just took in all the information I could from the guys that had a lot more experience than me at the time.
What was the and in terms of your fellow team members from South Africa, because they were very specific about the shape of people on that show, the type of stunt people that were a look, I guess you could say, who are gonna be in front of camera with their shirts off. What was the level of experience, your experience compared to others? Were there some really experienced local stunt guys?
Sure, yeah. I think the most experienced guy I had with me was Michael Solomon. He's actually around, I think he's 53 or 54 now, but he's a legend in the industry at the moment, and he knew a lot. And the South African coordinator that we actually worked with as our team leader was Vernon Willemser, and he's the owner of Stunt Team here in South Africa, and he was the guy that directed us and also led us and kept the team in check, the South African team. We all know South Africans.
And what happened after Mad Max? What was your next gig after that, and how long did your next sort of show come on?
It actually took quite a while, because I went back to Joburg. I made a good amount of money for the first time, like, in my life. And I think it was around 3-4 months, I heard about a casting for Strike Back. And that was with SA Stunt Coordinator Kerry Gregg. And then there was a job in Johannesburg. And then it was just basically playing a performer, had to do a bullet hit on screen. And then, yeah, it was Strike Back. And after Strike Back, I ended up doing other small projects. And then, yeah, then it was Kite after that, the way I worked with Vernon Willemser. That was with Samuel L. Jackson, which was an anime-based real film. And then after Kite, I actually was on holiday with my wife, not thinking anything. This is when I still lived in Johannesburg, actually. And I actually got a message from a coordinator, stunt coordinator, Frans Spulhaus. He's the owner of Piranha Stunts. And he's the one who said, oh, how would you like to double Captain Flint? And obviously me lying in bed and not knowing anything, I'm on holiday and everything. And then I go and do my research. I'm like, who's Captain Flint? What's this all about? And it was actually the lead double on Black Sails season 2. And I ended up flying over to Cape Town. And yeah, I became the lead double for Black Sails season 2, 3, and 4. And I think that was for me the biggest transition point, is that I went there. I did a fight casting for Grant Powell, which was the fight coordinator on the job at the time. And yeah, I was basically a very good picture double for Mr. Toby Stevens himself. And yeah, I was black sailing it for 3 years after that.
Wow. That's amazing. What a great start. And what parkour? That was your background. What other sports were you playing at school, or what did you grow up doing? I mean,
swimming was one of my big ones. I actually loved to swim a lot. Like, I swam a lot when I was younger, and then also cliff jumping for some reason. That's why I like jumping off high things. It was actually one of my biggest fear was heights. But as I said, with Brandon Nirvanas, the Cirque du Soleil, he is a freak of nature. I always looked up to him, and he inspired me to learn how to be aerial aware and to not be afraid of the heights. And yeah, that's basically how I got in. And then with Grant Powell, I actually started seeing how the fight choreography things came into play. And that's, I think, what really caught me. As soon as I saw about fight choreography, I was like, wow, okay, this is where the bread and butter is. And that's what he always says, it's your bread and butter. So if you know how to fight, then yeah, it's all about performance with that stuff. So yeah.
Okay, I just kind of steal Grant Powell's quote there. So for anybody who's listening and getting into the business, if you want to stay in the business, learn to fight. Either that or learn to clean mats or make coffee. One of the two. One of the three.
Of course. He taught me that. He said, if you know how to fight, trust me, there's a lot of fight scenes in movies. With parkour chase sequences and stuff, I actually started to realize, yes, if there's a movie that has a parkour chase sequence, I would get hired. But for some reason, when I started focusing more on the fights and more on basic fight techniques, and boxing is one of the one things I went to, I started really learning about that stuff. And I got a hell of a lot more work when I did fight choreography, and I focused mainly on that.
Wow. It's a good job. And Black Sails is finished now, isn't it? Like that was, you say you did three or four seasons?
It was four seasons, yes. Four seasons in total.
And all shot in South Africa?
Correct, yes. Cape Town Film Studios. And then it was also out in Plettenberg Bay and all around South Africa they shot, yeah.
Wow. I worked with one of the producer directors of that, I think Dan Minahan. And what a great, yeah. It was neat. I think even a few Kiwis might have been on it.
I think Guy Norris actually directed, I think it was on season four or season three. Guy Norris actually came on, which was actually quite cool. It was the second time I got to see him. And yeah, he's quite the coordinator. He really tests the limits of the performers.
Yeah, no, I've heard that. Good on him. And it's you know, and sometimes it's, you know, I look to that generation. I mean, that's the people I look to. I mean, I remember watching Mad Max when I was a little guy, and when I was a big little guy before I got into the business, and it was just a world away. The stuff they were doing, there's nowhere in my sort of world view for even a life of a stuntman. It was just that something that existed with the astronauts. I didn't even sort of even look at that as a career option. But when you started to get into the business, you go, oh, okay. And because I was hanging around mostly mountaineers and these extreme kayakers. It wasn't even called extreme. These people who just did these incredible things that I read about and saw on film. And then you meet up with them in real life and, they're just normal guys.
Yeah, normal guys with extraordinary abilities.
I remember having a late teens, I sent a letter away to a mountain guide that I wanted to join an Everest expedition. I had no idea what I was doing in mountaineering, but I knew that's where I wanted to go. And I was working on Lord of the Rings, I think, and I was in his house because we were in his town, and I went to see him and took him a bottle of wine and just introduced myself, and we were watching slides of his expeditions, and I was like, gosh, he's amazing. I'm gonna pinch myself, but amazing.
That's awesome.
And sometimes you forget your own achievements sometimes when you take somebody else to have a look at you. And I've, in the very short time that I've known you through our mutual friends, I've just seen your progress in the last really 6 years, isn't it, that you've been in the game now?
Yeah, I think officially Mad Max 2012, so I think it's crouching on to 7-8 years to be official, if I put all the time, but 6 years. And,
yeah. Oh, it was Mad Max, what was that, 2012?
2012, yes. Yeah.
That's 8 years ago. Bloody.
Yeah.
It's time
even
for a sequel.
If I think about it, it's quite a while ago, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, time for a sequel. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I've been overhearing things about a sequel, or Furiosa or something there. But
sure. I think it's in the works. We'll watch that space. I might have to like jab a few buddies of mine and say, "What do you know? I know people who are. I know people are keen."
South Africa.
Yeah, Yeah, well, there you go. Hey, and also, I mean, it'd be interesting to know too, because some of the people that worked in that show, I know that the young Carl Van Morsel, who did some great driving on that, I know that he's
I actually did a stunt with Carl Van Morsel and Mick Van Morsel, his dad, as well. Very scary stunts when the war rig was actually right next to us, and the one stunt, the war rig has to drive away, and me as a war boy, I had to hang out the vehicle, and obviously give the war rig a zap, because as a war boy, we didn't care about death. We wanted to go out gloriously. And I remember, I think it was Carl Van Morsel or Mick Van Morsel, one of the two was driving the car. And I remember on the eighth take, I turned and I looked at Carl and I was like, did they call cut? And he turns to me, he's like, they didn't call cut. The only reason why I asked the question is because the war rig was actually driving so far away and it was actually coming to turn back into us. And as it hit into us, the crash bar on the left front-hand side lodged in the front of the vehicle, and the whole entire vehicle ended up going on its tip on the front and stopped. And I asked Carl and I was like, listen, are we going to do that again? He's like, no, well, the car is total. We can't do it again. It's like, thank God.
No, they're good people to have on your side, aren't they?
Of course, talented, man. Super talented.
I invited them over to to work with me on a movie, and I was really good to have both father and son, and Mick is so good. He goes, yeah, Carl's got the best upbringing. You know, I wish I had a dad like me when I was growing up.
That's awesome.
That's very cool. But the interesting thing is, and Mick didn't need to send me his show reel, but I think my assistant on this job was Tim Wong. And he, at that time, no, I can't afford Tim Wong. And well, he tells me I can't, and he sent me a link to one of Mick's old show reels, and I'm going, man, he is I know he does all these amazing vehicle work, but he's such a talented stunt guy. I mean, he's doing all these high falls onto airbags and all this stuff that you just don't see nowadays. A show reel to die for, and then he sent me links, Mick, over the years of some of the tests that he was doing for Mad Max and some of the stuff that Carl's been doing. It's going really cool. Just a great fun sort of life to have, playing with vehicles and all sorts of things. Exactly. Well, I was at the start of our conversation, I was talking about, you've done some pretty impressive gags, and Mad Max was just full of those. And I know that there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make the film that is done in terms of rehearsal and testing, and our audience out there get to, give credit to the people that make the final cut all the time, or who gets it, but I know it takes a team to get there. But it's such a small world. I was inquired many years ago about a project that was going called War, and then all of a sudden I discover, as you often do, there was a job going over in some part of the world, and you get those. And then I found out last year that War was made, and with new director and a new bunch of people, and then to know that you were on it and doing one of those big gags. Tell us about that, how you ended up on that show, because that looks like an amazing trip. Of the trailer's impressive.
Yeah, that was an amazing show. That's actually, I got that job through Franz Spillhaus. He actually called me over, and I think the first mention of that job, he actually sent me a picture of the bridge, and he says, how are you with heights? And I was like, well, how high? So he sent me the picture of the bridge, and then ended up looking at it, and I was like, wow, okay, that's 85 meters high. And obviously it was a massive swing where I had to jump off and then actually do a 180 turn. And when the line catches me, I end up swinging through and then falling into the water. And I would actually have to say thank you to Franz Spillhaus for giving me that massive opportunity. And I actually got it done. We ended up doing the take twice, the jump twice, which was,
Any stunt that you do that makes the trailer is one that you want to put on your show reel.
Definitely. There was another one that Ritik did for I mean, I do ride bikes, but I think my first ever bike stunt was me doubling Ritik. And as Tiger Shroff, he was the other bad guy in it, he ends up tackling me. So basically like a T-bone. So I'm going straight. And as I'm going straight to Tiger's stunt double, which is Adrian, I forgot his surname, but he ended up tackling me through a glass plane into a little coffee shop, and then a little fight took place there. So that was also my first bike gag as the Ritik double.
That made the trailer as well, correct?
Yes, yeah, two of my stunts made the trailer, which is
So
very
if
nice to know.
go and have a look at the trailer of War and with Hendrik Roshan, and they're great looking film actually, and great action. Growing up in Fiji, I can appreciate we have a very large Indian community, and so Bollywood action films is part of my upbringing, and actually, so I think we've delayed. I think I've seen the bus driver actually slow down the bus so we can finish the film before we get to the destination, because I think nobody will get off the bus. I'll keep the door shut. And so where was that bridge that you jumped off? That was in Portugal or somewhere.
That was in Portugal, yes. The Luí I Bridge. I think it's pronounced that way. Luis I Bridge,
Wow.
yeah. Yeah.
It's been a while since I've done something like that where I felt the butterflies, I mean, who would want to jump off a perfectly good bridge tied to a 12 mil line? And
Not
how
cool.
did you just how was that? Did you rehearse that, or did you just do the first real jump on the day? How did that kind of work for you?
I didn't rehearse it. Actually, one of Franz Palas's partners, actually, he ended up testing it for me in the beginning. He came up to me and said, "Would you like me to test it?" Because the one thing I did appreciate about it, he likes to also show that the gag is safe and everything is good. And he ended up testing it for me. And then I spoke to France, and then France said to me, "No, it's fine. It's been tested." And then I did it the very next day.
That's so cool. Such a got a great rig team there. And were they Piranha Stunts rigging? Were they Who are those guys?
And it was a Portuguese team. So I think the key rigger was Joe Spilhouse, which is actually Franz Spilhouse's brother. Then we had Ruan. He was also one of the riggers, and so there's quite a few riggers. I'm hoping I'm not missing any names, but those are the two names that actually come to mind at the moment.
That's so
Those
good.
four, yeah,
I
pretty
can
good.
say, having been a rigger myself and asking people to like jump off, and you do it so many times, I get I'm checking everything, and then it's one thing for me to check, and I can just think of the guy or the girl who's on the end of the line who's actually going to do the gag and going, what death,
We trust the riggers.
and they've got to, they're trusting me. Crap. Lock every gate, make sure everything's check,
Yeah.
check, 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 check.
Triple check, triple check. I'm not jumping
Oh,
into every triple
it's
check.
amazing. There
Yeah.
really are the unsung heroes of modern day stunts in many ways
Oh,
right
of
now,
course. I
because
take my hat off. Definitely.
how
And then
many
I
gags?
forgot to mention, Augie, though. So what they did was they did quite a substantial amount of tests with the sandbag, and obviously too, I'm sure you know about that, just to get the weight and the direction and where everything's going. Yeah, before they put a human on. So I do remember them doing that.
It's
Very
so
cool.
good. And I can imagine resetting for a gag like that must take forever, detach
Oh,
and
that's it. Well, the thing is, we had to lock off both sides. So both sides of the little islands, there's so many people watching. So when the lock-off came off, everybody just had to walk across the bridge, and eventually it took another 45 minutes to an hour for a full reset. And yeah, it was a mission, but I'm glad we
Wow.
got it done.
That's so cool. And gags like that, I mean, you have to, if you already double, triple check, you're going to check six, seven, eight times, especially when you've got a big audience
Oh yeah.
who essentially come to watch something to go wrong so they can.
I'm sure a lot of people are doing that. Oh, I hope that line snaps. I hope something goes wrong because it's more entertaining.
It actually
People
takes me
are
back to, I think we did a big descender fall in downtown, and it was and as the day went on, and we're doing a high fall from a very large building onto on a descender, and I think from when we started to people going past, by the time three quarters of the day, I think we just literally had traffic control and people, police. There was the crowd came to watch, and dropping this girl onto a bonnet of a car. And there's no such thing as secrecy anymore in film. And
no way, not with cell phones.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. Oh, that's so cool. What a great
thank you, Augie.
What a great gag. And did you hear the crowd cheer and a clap from afar when you did it?
Oh, of course. I heard both islands just light up. Even when I had to reset, you know, that they say for a stunt man is his kind of 10 minutes of glory.
Yes.
And every single time I actually reset, when they actually lowered me down to the center of the driveway, and then when I reset and I ended up traveling all the way back to the top of the bridge, I felt like a bit of a superstar for a few minutes.
That's amazing. Let's
jump again.
Oh, that's so cool. And you're just hoping that they nailed it the first time. You didn't have to do it again, but okay.
Oh, that's exactly what I was hoping. What is actually, it was my fault. The reason why they had to go again is because the first jump, they wanted me to do a 180 turn to look back at the guy that was chasing me. But obviously when you're that high and you jump off, you kind of don't know what your body's going to do. And with me in high falls, I know that any small movement can change your trajectory or can change how you're going to fall. So for me to do the 180 turn without anything going wrong, I was very, how can I say, my mind was racing about that. As soon as the director said to me, okay, I'm going to get you to do a 180 turn. I was like, shit, okay, that's much more different than just jumping off straight.
There's very few stunts anymore, and you know, you get it very much still in a lot of some car gags, but you know, with everything so measured now, there is there are still stunts out there that if it doesn't work, it goes very wrong.
Of course, yeah. The scale of how big they're becoming, I guess.
Yeah, wow. That gag that you've done there, I mean, everything came down to this, and you can have as much of a fancy rig as much as you want, but it all comes down to one single point, and that's connected to your harness. And if that, you know, if that one point fails, you know, it's game over and a gag like that. So really, it's a, you know, and you know, we'll put credit to where it's due here, and to yourself for putting yourself on the line like that, and also to your riggers. What an amazing gag. And we need to celebrate these big gags that are happening out there, the riggers and the performers coming together, and also to before that also the writers and directors who fight for good stunts like that to still remain
remain alive.
Yeah, how easy it would be just to jump off a tower and onto a green screen onto mats, and then somebody will manipulate you on something like that. But
exactly.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, I could talk about gags like this forever. They're so much fun. What was the food like there? I always ask studies, you know, what was food like in Portugal and the beer?
Oh, it's amazing. Sure. And the bagels and all the sweet stuff was actually really nice, but I thoroughly enjoyed the food. Even the hotel we stayed at was very nice. I mean, the nice thing about France, we generally always get treated quite nicely as the crew, and the Indians always treat us well, which is very good. They always put us in a nice spot.
Oh, that's very cool. Wow. And you know, you guys are having a bit of obviously a quiet patch right now, and that's challenging for a lot of people. And with COVID, I mean, those are things that are outside of your control and in many respects. And and it's a fine balance, isn't it? Because this thing could go on for a little while longer. And but I hear Europe's opening up again, parts of Europe. And
right. And one of my friends, Scott Kirkbright, he's actually gone over there now to work on Batman, I believe.
Correct, yeah.
One of the performers on that, and he also assistant rigger, and he's gone to work over there. But then we overheard that's the lead actor, the Twilight himself. He ended up getting COVID or something like that, so they had to shut down that portion of the shoot. But I think they had precautionary setup, so obviously if one thing happens, they move on to another set or another process.
Did you, you know, in your time in the industry, is this like been the trickiest gap? You know, you've enjoyed Mad Max, of course. You went straight into Strike Back, and I know that at times, you know, been busy and making money are two very different things, you know. Especially if you're a stuntman, because stuntman, if you're a good one, you're always going to be busy either rehearsing or getting things going. But you need those jobs to be the ones that pays. You know, with your run, I mean, has this been the quietest patch, I guess you could say, for you, or in terms of some of your peers?
100%. I mean, the last job I actually worked on was a job called Triage, which was actually with a Bollywood company. And that was with Franz Fulhaus. And we were actually shooting up in Jaipur at the time. And that was just before March, if I can remember. And the whole COVID thing started picking up and we were all over there. And I remember all of us getting quite scared because I was fire choreographer on that job. And because we were shooting a massive battle sequence with, I think, like over 10 elephants, 30 horses, 300 extras. And because of the crowd and the whole, the news that came out about don't be in crowded spaces and stuff. But meanwhile, we're shooting a massive battle sequence with 300 locals. And so that was a bit of a scare. But yeah, ever since then, it's probably been around 6.5 months now. It's been absolutely quiet. And other jobs have come up, but they've been shut down again due to COVID-19. So it's quite pressing times, actually.
Wow. And can I just ask how old you are?
I am now 30 years old.
It's quite amazing. I would just love to do that because, you know, when I talk to some of my peers overseas, I mean, you and I have a very similar sort of journey where you, and I think it has to do with our geographical location and also the industry that we're part of, you know. You can grow very quickly because as I'm listening to you, you're saying, you know, you were working as a fight choreographer and you started in the industry like 6 years ago and on something that's off scale as well. You know, it's when I talk to some of my American peers and Canadian peers and also some of my UK friends, you know, because their system is so structured and it's so much bigger. And and like one thing I find and especially in my industry here in New Zealand, you learn on the job as you go, and sometimes you have to do things and because there's no one else.
Busy basically. So yeah. The next guy with most experience. I mean, that's kind of what happened for me on Black Sails season 4. That was my first jump from performer to fight choreographer, because the original fight choreographer was Grant Powell, phenomenal fight choreographer, actually. He's the guy that I look up to a lot, and himself and Vernon Willem. So when they kind of were too busy and they couldn't make it on season 4, due to my experience with the actors and the amounts of time I've spent with them and me understanding the hack and slash sword fighting style that they required, France actually, in a way took a chance, because obviously I was still kind of new. But he saw how I grafted and how I put my head down and I got the work done and I designed fights. And I was also well-versed in shooting and editing it myself as well. So I kind of brought the full package with knowing everything to send the previews to the director or the producers. And so, it's kind of what helped me a lot is also my editing side.
I was going to ask you that question, but I think you've just answered it really well. And I think that's really what's key. It's not just people taking risks or whatever. There was a whole bunch of other skills that you possessed that has enabled you to be able to go to that level that you are now and stay there and continue. Yeah. And I think I was talking to Brett Chan last week, I think, or now. 2 weeks ago, and which was a lot of fun. I mean, we just talk a lot of crap to each other, but we had to behave for the sake of the podcast.
Yeah, of course, I understand.
Yeah, and but you know, and that's one of the things that you know, that we see. You know, is like it takes more than just being able to roll down the stairs or throw a punch to make it in this business. And you can make it in those skills, but if you are, but you can be frustrated doing the one thing, you need to be able to grow. And if I just ask the question here, what things were you doing at high school perhaps back then you didn't really see the link, but perhaps you're seeing now it's paying dividends in terms of what you're doing now.
I didn't actually go to school. My mom took me out of school just before high school, actually. And then I was ended up homeschooled for a little while. And then after that, my mom actually gave me about 4 years of freedom in order to find out what I wanted to do. So I actually started drawing, and I actually really enjoyed doing animation and working with editing programs and stuff. And I ended up doing that as a side hustle and going to City Varsity. I did my 3 years of animation, and I never went back after I got that call for Mad Max to Cape Town. I never went back to doing animation or anything like that. I became a stuntman and kind of veered that way.
Wow. That's, I just think about that. That's quite, you've actually, I think you've said it in a really interesting way there that, yes, you did all that. You did that study, but never really linking stunts into that. But now somebody listening could goes, I could go down that path because I really like it now, and marry it with a career like stunts. And
I think that for me, it was the editing side, understanding computer programs and stuff like that. That's what's assisted me most now, to know how to operate Final Cut Pro or Adobe Premiere. I mean, I'm actually right now learning or studying After Effects because the international pre-bizes, like, for instance, The Witcher, I watched one of their pre-bizes, and the particle elements that they had, and actually superimposing the arrows in to give the director a good idea of what the pre-biz is showing. And that's kind of what inspired me now to learn effects program, because I think the more you can spoon feed the director into giving him the image he wants to see, the better it can be. Rather than saying in like a little text at the bottom, your arrow goes here, it would be nice to superimpose the arrow there and show physically. So that's
very cool. I remember just my very first form of previs, I had a VHS camera with a fold out screen, which was really new.
Wow.
And
that's old school.
And the director was so complimentary, because mine, I bought one with a slightly larger screen, and then so I was just able to show the rehearsal, and little did you know, and VHS died not long after. It's the story of my life. I'm sounding old now. One of my key riggers that I use is Mornay Van Tonder, who's a...
Oh, I love working with him, man. I've worked with him a few times. Brilliant, man.
And, he has an engineering degree, and it's kind of like... And yet he's found an industry that he can apply that to, and as a rigger. And, and you can just see why he does so well.
Of course, definitely. No, he's brilliant.
One of the things I was talking to Brett Chan about recently, and there was a question I asked, and I think he answered it quite well. And it takes to be a performer, which you are, and I still perform now, but I choose now the type of action that I do now is probably not the same as what I was doing in my 20s. They are just gags that I just don't bounce as well.
Obviously the body breaks a little bit more easier now.
but in terms of you, I mean, like, your job options now are such that you're fight choreography as well, and you're still got many, many years of stunting, your lead doubling.
I've got a lot of things I want to accomplish, definitely.
Yeah. How are you spending your, how do you kind of split up your time? And at the same time, you've got a 2.5 little girl, year old girl. And, where are you spending most of your, how are you spending your time staying, ready for anything like that? Because the next phone call you get, it could be, hey, I needed a fight coordinator. And that could mean lots of things depending on the show you go to. It could mean shooting, editing, but maybe doubling as well, depending on the budget and the layout of the show. Just how do you kind of stay ready right now, given the time that you've got?
I think the main thing that we do, or that I do along with my brother, a friend of mine, Bron, in October, we shoot passion projects. And through the passion projects, we actually won an award now for the Cape Town Film Festival, where we just go out and what we do, we split roles, because all of us are performers. All of us, we also choose to design fights, but we actually switch roles when we do these passion projects. So for instance, I was fighting my brother in the last one, so I'm getting still in tune with my performance. But then the very next passion project, I will be shooting. And then my brother will be designing the fight, and then Bon will be performing. So we kind of just rotate positions in order to just really get a good understanding of each role. And that's how we stay prepared. And then almost every day, I train with my brother probably the most, which is Ian Williamson, which is a Vin Diesel stunt double. He worked on Bloodshot and on Fast and Furious 9. And I train with him actually the most, doing movement training and physical training. And because I think for any word of advice is to be a fighter, yes, you can punch a bag. Yes, you can learn the techniques. Yes, you can do your katas and stuff. But it's a dance. Fight choreography is a dance. So you have to become so used to fighting with someone in order to understand the movements of how, what fight choreography is. Well, yeah, that explains it.
Wow, that's really, that's really well done. And just explain, in your words, it's I like the way you describe passion projects. So essentially what I'm hearing from you, these are projects that you guys have developed yourself.
Correct. Yeah, we've got our own camera equipment. We've got our, we go and suss out our own locations. So we do our own recces. We basically do everything ourselves, from the editing to the final product, to the sound producing, to the ADR. We try and cover everything. So we almost our own little company, and then we put it out to film festivals and even for our own showreel basis. And I shot a massive fight sequence in my garage, which was really cool. We actually put a couch in the garage. We got our own breakaways. We made our own sugar glass, and we really went the full mile with that one. But yeah, it's just obviously just creating new and as much as possible, because then like to answer your question, it definitely means we're more ready when any job comes, is that we're kind of doing it already. So it's not like we've been out for 4 months and then we're on set again. We kind of create our own set vibe. So then the next day we get called and it's almost the same thing. So yeah, that's how we keep ourselves ready.
Yeah, that's really valuable information. And I know that people get, just listen to you talk. I know people who, they think the word production and sets is left to those big productions. No, I mean, this can be done with, I remember we're doing it with, when we first got my, a few of us got first MacBooks with iMovie in it, we were able to shoot stuff and edit. And, and to this date, I still use it. I still use iMovie, you know, when it's like, for a quick edit, it still works. You shoot on cell phone, you shoot on iPad, you shoot on anything. Make it work to keep the brain functioning.
Oh, of course, definitely. It's still a good program in order to get the idea through. So it's a video editing program, so it still works.
Yep, and there's lots of free apps out there that people can use to do these things. Now, your brother, and I just got interested, Ian.
Yeah.
Who started first, him or you?
It was myself. I started first on Mad Max, and then when I got the call to come to Cape Town to double for Captain Flint, I knew my brother. I mean, my brother, he's hard as nails. Like, I always knew he would be very good as a stunt performer. So he ended up driving with me to Cape Town. I said, dude, come with me. I'll get your name in there and stuff. And I think he did one physical casting on Black Sails with me, and he never really stopped. He shined from then on forward, and yeah, he became very well known very quickly. He did a very good job on Black Sails as well.
I'm going to ring him up straight away and says, well, your brother said this about you. Is it true? He said he got you into the business.
He got himself into the business. I'm recorrecting my words.
I'll play you guys against each other. Sibling rivalry. That'd be awesome. Oh, well done. So, that's really cool. And what an, I think that's one of the perks of the benefits of making business where we're based, rather than necessarily going to those big, the big city lights of Hollywood or UK, you know, you can still work on these big shows. They come to you in some respects, or your geographical location and the credentials that you can have in your home base really can work to your credit. I mean, Adrian McGaugh was a classic guy. He worked on a show that I did called The Warrior's Way, and bam, straight to the UK with his passport, and life's done what is has taken him on this amazing journey, and it's a guy that we're really proud of. And he's Jacob,
brilliant. He's a nice person as well.
Wow, that's really insane. So what's what's going on in South Africa generally? So you guys have how does one become a stunt person in South Africa? What's the traditional route right now, for people getting into the business?
Now we have a thing called SASA, which is the South African Stunts Association, and we basically have a training facility, and I'm trying to remember the word, is that we do a bit of an introduction video. So then we give them a certain template or a certain idea of basic choreography, basic falls, basic reactions, basic performance aspects. And then they basically log that video into SASA. And then that's kind of the stepping point into getting a call for a job. And it's changed a lot since back in my day. Back in when I started, we didn't have anything like that. Like, you get the call, you go to set or you go to a rehearsal space, you shine there, and then they kind of say they like you, so they're going to carry on bringing you in. But right now, it's kind of, that's the process that's going on now, is that's, you know, you have to go through a bit of a system with SASA, and then you slowly get your name known there.
Getting many girls coming through?
Girls?
Yeah, how's that going? Are they coming? Are there girls?
Yeah, there's girls. There's actually quite a few girls. Right now, a friend of mine, Nathan Barris and Paul Hampshire, they are actually doing workshops at Piranha Stunts. I mean, it's the only place we can kind of do anything at the moment with. And a lot of the girls are actually training. I think it's 5 or 6 that are training at the moment. They've done quite a few films themselves as well, but it's quite a few, actually. For me to mention a name, the legendary female stunt performer in our country is Fleur Van Eeden. I don't know if you know about her. She's, for me, most inspiring, but she doesn't work in stunts anymore. She's kind of retired.
Right.
She's brilliant. Yeah.
You say retired, she's probably still in her early 30s or something like that, is she?
Yeah, she's like 1 year older than me.
Yeah, there you go. She'll come back.
She will. She already did once on one job. And she didn't come back after that.
I have never seen a successfully retired stuntman or woman. You know, that was right.
Oh, of course.
I've rang up a few when I'm desperate and parts of the world. Hey, what are you doing? And he goes, oh, hang on, I'll get back to you. They're thinking about it, crossing my fingers. And discovered, oh, no, I'm on the school committee and I've got to do this. And,
yeah.
Yeah, they've got to. Oh, there's a real estate deal that they can't get out of.
Yeah, so, there we go.
Yeah. Now, good honor. And we look, my regards to them. That's really cool. Just tell us about Warrior just before you head off, because that shot right there in your great continent. Did you go on both seasons of Warrior?
I actually did a physical casting. I remember I actually first, Johnny Yang came a little bit earlier, and then we overheard about a physical casting. And obviously, I'm sure you know how it goes with them. All of our South African performers, well, this big shows coming to South Africa. It's based on Bruce Lee's stories and how he wrote it. And we all ended up doing a physical casting. I did my physical casting with my brother because it was based on a one-on-one fight. And I made it through, my brother made it through. And yeah, I ended up doubling the character Leary. And he was one of the Irish mob leader. And then I met Brett Chan, the lovely Brett Chan. Then yeah, he basically directed me throughout it. And the SA stunt coordinator that was on it as well was Craig McRae. He was working under Piranha Stunts at the time. And yeah, season 1 and season 2, I came in halfway through because I was actually working on a Bollywood film. And I ended up coming halfway through to finish off, I think, for the last 2 months on season two. But for me, if anything, I think Warrior was my big transition point of learning how to fight, because I ended up having to fight against the Chinese guys. And I mean, the level of what they were on is inspiring still to this day, because they just, how they moved and how they performed. And I mean, the one guy that comes to mind is a guy called Chang Chuan, and he doubled for Andrew Koji. And I remember looking at him, I was like, I want to move like him. I want to do it exactly how he does it, because it's just fire. He was really good. And yeah, Zin Wuku, the legend, that he was the one that trained the actors. He assisted me on how to also do physical training with the actors, because I did a lot of that as well. So every morning, I'm sure you know the Brett Chan process is wake up in the morning, get to work, train for 3 hours, then we start to work, which I actually love that process.
It's a great family that he creates. And
the camaraderie is amazing with Brett Chan's jobs. And the amount of people he gets on, I'm surprised, because he brings like almost the entire world into one little location.
That's really cool. And well done. I mean, let's hope, you know, they green light another season of that, because it's,
I hope so.
I've seen some of the fights, and you know, comparing previous to the final cut, you know, Johnny just done job with me, as you know. And I've been really, really like the look of the show. I watch very little anything at the moment, just because it takes so much time. And I enjoy watching the final cut versus the previs. And
Yang's prevising is brilliant. He actually inspired me a lot to put a lot of focus onto my previs work, because I always admired Johnny's sound usage in the previs work, with all the fight sounds and how he shot it, and knowing his angles and knowing his lenses, and he's brilliant in that way. So Johnny Yang is definitely someone that inspired me a lot in that area.
And I think, you know, once we, you know, when you walk away from a production, once you've gone away from the day you've shot your film, you've handed things over really to the editors, and it's that weight of months where you goes, oh, did what made the cut, what didn't, because the editors can only work with what's in front of them. And so, and I think one of the things that good previs does is, if everybody loves it, you just commit to shooting the previs, and the editor has to work with it. And
exactly. I mean, Johnny Yang's very clever that way. He shot it, so they didn't have any other options. They had to use with what, so they had to go according to the previs, which was brilliant.
Sometimes that's why they have pickups too. It's like, damn it.
That's true.
You shoot a previs, and you know one camera's got your previs, and they've got two other cameras. Damn it! That means the editor's going to have a lot of options, and and it ends up, you know, and that's the thing now. It's director's still got to make their film. And
of course.
It's been really great. And before we kind of sign out. So. Right now, in South Africa, it's coming into October. Is the industry running again, or is it? Are there restrictions on what can happen in South Africa? What's the politics there right now?
Right now, we're in stage one lockdown, so international travel, I think, opens up on the 1st of October. But right now, nothing major is actually going on. The one job that I do know is going on is actually being shot now in Mauritius with Grant Powell and Cyprian Florian. They're the two fight guys over there. And they're actually there with Angela, which is also a female stunt performer. But for me, that's the only kind of big job that I know that's kicking off at the moment. Everything else is still very much nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, look, I think we'll just hope that they can sign off and green light some things. Those studios could definitely do with some work, eh?
No, of course, man, especially Cape Town Film Studios. And there's a job that I'm booked for. It's a film called One Piece, which is the same producers from Black Sails. And that starts in January next year. And yeah, I'm just holding thumbs for that to even go through, because that originally was supposed to start a month ago. But then they said no, obviously due to the COVID-19 numbers and everything, it got sat. So yeah, that's only happening now in January, late January.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's hope that somebody gets a job somewhere that we can at least get some people outside their borders and keep those passports going. And I think the
blessing now is that the borders are opening up. So South African borders and international travel is opening up from the 1st of October. So that's a good start, I guess.
Mm. Yeah. Well, definitely. Hey, well, Stuart, thanks, mate. It's been fun and it's been great. I'm really pumped just listening to you talk about some of the gags you do. I know.
Thank you, Augie. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, it's really cool. And you'll never know any of these days, eh? I know that for some of you listening, just wondering how we connect. So I was doing a gig last year and seriously thought about Stuart coming over and helping out with a fight part of our fight team. And I know his name's been thrown at me several times. I do a lot of work, especially around water, and a lot of my work has been around water in the last few years, and also some of the bigger sort of battle type movies, etc. Where it needs lots of good, clear thinking men and women to lead other teams. And so his name's certainly been in my mix in the last 2 or 3 years, and at the recommendation of some really good people that I trust in the business. And and I think that's so inspiring to have people around the world who are sort of like flying your flag for you.
And I think it's awesome, man. I can only say thank you to everyone that has done that. Thank you.
And on that note too, and I just want to say that they've done that for your brother as well. So it's a real, there's obviously something went right there with your upbringing that you can produce two quality stuff.
Oh, he's my best friend as much as he's the best guy I work with as well.
Sometimes a huge disappointment to the parents, because that education here at university, they've end up being stuntmen, breaking their arms, and
we risk our lives for a living.
Oh, good on them. Yeah. Oh. Hey, well, look, man, and thanks again, and we'll kind of end it there. I'm going to stop recording. This is Augie Stuntstruck, and ordinary people doing extraordinary things today. Stuart Williamson from South Africa. Cool, man. That was really awesome.
Thank you, Augie. I really appreciate it.
What's your plans today? What are you up to? Oh, it's night. It's nighttime there.
Nighttime now, yeah. So I'm probably going to go put my daughter to sleep now.
I need to get out, and I've got a dent in the pickup, so it needs to go and get fixed.
Oh, no. And what's the time there now, Augie?
It's 8:15 in the morning, so the day's just starting. It's school holidays, we're taking my wife and I. We're going to go for we're getting all the canoes and all my bow ready. We're going to go for a canoe and for a few days time and, on one of the nearby lakes, and for a few days. And
very cool.
It's good. I've been banned. I'm not allowed to take anything that makes a loud noise. I'm taking my bow.
For good reason.
She wants to be so quiet.
No, of course, man. No.
Hey, brother. Well, look, thank you. That was really good. And what we'll do is I'm going to put this up